calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, the big headline is that Iran is supplying weapons to insurgents. However, nobody in the administration will go on record as saying that. Nobody in the military will go on record as saying that. It's just senior U.S. military officials, senior military, according to the military official, this military official, that military official, another military. However, the Associated Press, private Saudi citizens are giving millions of dollars to Sunni insurgents in Iraq, and much of that money is being used to buy weapons, including shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles, according to key Iraqi officials and others familiar with the flow of cash. This, according to the Iraq Study Group report, among others. So, let's see. The Iraqis are giving the Sunni shoulder-fired missiles. We've had six helicopters in Sunni areas go down. And the headlines are all about Iran. Could there be another war brewing? I don't know. We'll see. We'll talk about that as we get into the program. Right now, let's not forget that this place where this war is going on is basically the center of oil for the world. 40% of the world's exported oil goes through the Straits of Hormuz out of the Gulf. And Craig Smith is with us. He's with SwissAmerican.com and CraigRSmith.com. And, Craig, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Good to be with you.
Good to have you back with us. You and Jerome Corsi, who has been a guest on this program, have come out with this new book, Black Gold Stranglehold, Exploding Common Myths. Forget Everything You Know About Oil is the headline over at WorldNet Daily. You suggest that, you know, there's really no problem with fossil fuels. There's no, you know, that peak oil is a myth, that the formation of oil is a myth, the global warming is a hoax, and that we should just keep drilling and be happy. Am I exaggerating?
Well, it might be a bit of an exaggeration. I will say this, that we don't think that the answer is drilling in perpetuity. I think we should be exploring all the options, you know, solar, wind, hydrogen, biodiesels, ethanol, so on and so forth. But until we perfect those and make them economically feasible, we clearly have enough oil in the world to last us quite a long time. And I think for us to be making policy over this belief that we're going to run out over the next 50-100 years, I think, is foolishness.
So you think that you don't acknowledge that the United States peaked its oil production in 1974?
No, not even close. If you
then why did we stop producing as much oil?
Well, we stopped exploring. We shut off the outer continental shelves. We stopped exploring in Alaska. I mean, recently
we're still exploring, Craig. My brother-in-law was running ships out to the Gulf for exploration.
Well,
I mean,
that's a perfect example, Tom. The Jack II well that Devon Energy, along with Chevron and Statoil, in the Gulf of Mexico this summer, produced a 25,000-foot well that's now going to have a billion-barrel reserve. So clearly, if we can find that, and we have found at least 750 million barrels in the Anwar, I mean, if you put those into the numbers, we're clearly not declining in production. I think you could make the argument that we would be expanding in production.
Which means we might be slitting our own throats. There's two other issues, then, that this brings. One is obviously the one of global warming that everybody's talking about. The other one is one that, frankly, I think is a bigger issue that nobody seems to be talking about, except perhaps here in the Pacific Northwest we're seeing it. And that is, for example, here, our benzene levels are about in the air about 40 times higher than they are in other parts of the United States. Because our air is so clean, benzene is an expensive toxin, a byproduct of the refinery of gasoline, that's difficult and expensive to dispose of. So the gas companies are simply putting it in our gasoline so that we dispose of it for them at no cost to them. In fact, we pay them for it by burning it in our cars. Benzene causes leukemia, among other cancers. I mean, having a dependence on fossil fuels is killing us. We've got, you know, one in three Americans are going to get cancer in their lifetime.
Well, I've yet to see any links that would suggest that the cancers are being caused by what you suggest, but I guess it's possible. I think you have to look at the trade-offs, though, Tom. I mean, some could argue that we would have never had the type of growth that we have or heated homes and air-conditioned homes in the summer unless we had sustained sources of energy. And clearly, crude natural gas and refined crude has given us the lifestyles that we have here in America today. So, I mean, are there environmental hazards that we need to deal with? Sure. And, you know, is global warming occurring? I suspect it is. I mean, it seems to be that 90% of all the scientists concur. I don't agree that they're unanimous in their agreement that humans have caused it, but nevertheless, it is occurring. And they
are unanimous in their agreement that humans are playing an effect.
Well, I disagree. The people in the IPCC report are, scientists universally are not 90%. And even if they were, Tom, at one time, you know, 90% of the scientists in the world agreed the Earth was flat. Didn't mean that it was. I mean, at one time.
I can't believe you're saying that, Craig.
at one time, I mean, you know, 90% of people.
But that's your argument?
Well, at one time, you know, scientists believed the sun revolved around the Earth. It didn't make it so, Tom. And, you know, I love how everybody just assumes, because it's been said so often, that it's a matter of fact, yet I can show you voice after voice that would indicate that, hey, I mean, how do you explain? The New York Times says that if we keep on this path by the year 2100, we will have the same temperatures on Earth that we had 125,000 years ago. Well, if I remember correctly, we didn't have SUVs or coal-burning plants 125,000 years ago. Even the New York Times suggests that. So, I mean, I don't think it's as conclusive as some would suggest, Tom, and I think what we should fund science to really investigate it in all areas, not just the area that man is the culprit in this whole equation.
Well, I think a lot of it, they're talking about, you know, how things were more than 3 million years ago, which was before the Isthmus of Panama came up and changed the ocean circulation.
Well, I think you and I would agree on certain things. I think it was a huge mistake to cut down and destroy the rainforests, so let's replant them. I think, look, I'm all for clean air and clean water. I think environmentalism has really helped America in a lot of those issues. However, I think that we can push it a little bit too far on occasion. It's like any
Craig, you have countries like Brazil where more than half of all the automobiles in Brazil right now are producing exhaust that you could breathe if you wanted to. You could you know, drink the few drops of water that come out of their tailpipes. You've got countries like Finland where 19-20% of all of their electricity is being produced by wind power. Why shouldn't we be taking the hundreds of billions of dollars a year that we're spending right now to defend the interests of the industry that you're defending, the oil industry all around the world, and put some of that money into the development of alternative energy so that we no longer have to be fighting wars in oil-producing regions?
Well, we don't have to fight wars in oil-producing nations right now if we went out and develop the natural resources we have right here in America. The number one oil producer in the world is Saudi Arabia. Number two is Russia. Number three is the United States of America. And that's after we stopped pursuing energy sources here in America. But if you're going to suggest to use Brazil as the example or Norway as the example, when you're talking talking about nations that are, you know, one-tenth of 1% of our economy, I think is a ludicrous equation to make. I mean, we have way more cars per capita than Brazil has. We have, I mean, it's just not a fair comparison, Tom.
Brazil has millions. Brazil is a huge country, Craig. You ever been there? I mean,
yes, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. They're taking over a lot of the agriculture that we have here in America. But to compare their gasoline consumption or energy usage in automobiles compared to the United States, Tom, I just don't think is a fair equation. That's why, look, and I said to you earlier, I believe we should pursue ethanol and biodiesels and hydrogen and solar and wind and all that.
But let's not rock the boat of the oil industry.
I'm sorry?
But let's not rock the boat of the oil industry.
Let's open
up Anwar for drilling. Let's open up the Pacific and Atlantic Gulf coasts for drilling. Let's find more oil first.
That's what you're asserting, right? In the short run, that would sure keep us from having to get it out of Saudi Arabia where people are dying over it. And I think that that's a viable alternative until we can embrace some of these alternative fuels that will economically make sense.
Why not instead, over the short run, embrace energy conservation? I mean, we could dramatically cut energy.
And you and I agree on that. I mean, look, if just the average American, let's say you drive 100 miles a week, if you could just take 10 miles a week out of that equation, we'd substantially change.
Why don't we just raise our CAFE standards, our average fleet efficiency standards, to those of China or those of Japan?
I'm not sure that I mean, then you'd have to argue the case that you believe that more government regulations are beneficial. And whenever
yes.
the government improves something or increases something in one area, it generally has an impact in another area. It's kind of like all the...
No. yeah, when government made sure that our food was safe, people stopped dying.
Well, if I remember correctly, everybody that eats
when government put chlorine in our water,
we all die over a given.
When government mandated chlorine in our water, we stopped having typhoid epidemics. I mean, you know, sometimes it works.
I wish it was that simple, Tom, but I understand your argument.
Craig Smith, SwissAmerican.com, and CraigRSmith.com.
Swiss America.
Oh, thank you.
Like Air America.
There you go. Like Swiss America. There you go. Thanks a lot, Craig, for talking
Thank you, Tom. Nice Good being time. With you.
Indeed. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. We'll be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You tell them the Dixie Chicks.
Success is the best revenge, huh? Congratulations on their honors last night. Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour in the radio support group of, by, and for We the People of the United States. Tom Hartman here with you. Amazing. Dana Rohrabacher, the Republican member of Congress, I believe he's from California. Dana Rohrabacher speaking at the first congressional hearing on the IPCC report. Says, well, in the past it's been warmer. You see, in the past we've had things like massive tectonic activity, the Earth being hit by asteroids. I mean, we've had some serious, you know, continents rising and falling, moving around. And all these things, of course, release or alter not just the surface of the Earth, they alter the atmosphere as well. So, you know, if you stir up a lot of the methane that's frozen down underneath the ocean because you've got an entire continent moving around, a lot of that methane gets into the air, carbon dioxide gets into the air, climate changes. And then it takes hundreds of thousands of years for vegetation to suck that carbon back down again. So, yeah, in the past, carbon dioxide levels have been higher, and they've been higher as a result of things that we don't want to happen now. And we certainly didn't want to happen then. Our number, by the way, 1-866-440-8466, 440-8466 or THOM. Dana Rohrabacher, here he is.
Whether or not how dramatic this change will be or is, what it's caused by, are things that honest people, I think, can disagree with. We
right.
don't know what those other cycles were caused by in the past. Could be dinosaur flagellants, you know, or who knows. You know, but we do know the CO2 in the past had its time when it was greater as well. And what happened when the CO2 was greater since then and now? There's been many cycles of up and down warming.
Yeah, and disasters, an entire species going away. Is that what you want, Dana Rohrabacher? Dinosaur flatulence is what you're concerned about? Come on, I'm sorry, I'm just... I'm not going to go there. Anyhow, bringing this back around, I mean, here we are. We would not be in Iraq if Iraq did not have all that oil. Right? I mean, I think that there's a fairly broad consensus about that. We wouldn't be in the Middle East if there wasn't all that oil. And the New York Times, the Associated Press, here we have the L.A. Times, Washington Post, News Service. Senior U.S. military officials in Iraq on Sunday sought to link Iran to deadly armor-piercing explosives and other weapons that they said are being used to kill U.S. and Iraqi troops with increasing regularity. You know, what they don't point out is that the vast majority of the battles that we're having are not in the Shia areas. They're in the Sunni areas. And our helicopters are being taken down in Sunni areas. And who's funding the Sunnis? Well, let us not forget this, you know, step into the Wayback Machine here. This is 2 months ago. The Associated Press, Dateline Cairo, December 8, 2006, private Saudi citizens are giving millions of dollars to Sunni insurgents in Iraq, and much of the money is used to buy weapons, including shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missiles, according to key Iraqi officials and others familiar with the flow of cash. U.S.-Iraq Study Group reports said Saudis are the source of funding for Sunni Arab insurgents. Several truck drivers interviewed by the Associated Press carrying boxes of cash from Saudi Arabia into Iraq said the money was headed for insurgents. Now, to the best of my knowledge, nobody has been interviewed who actually transported any of these weapons from Iran into Iraq, but somehow that's all over the front page. Back to the Associated Press story in the Wayback Machine here. In one recent case, an Iraqi official said $25 million in Saudi money went to a top Iraqi Sunni cleric and was used to buy weapons, including Strela, a Russian shoulder-fired anti-aircraft missile. The missiles were purchased from someone in Romania, apparently through the black market, he said. Overall, the Iraqi official said money has been pouring into Iraq from oil-rich Saudi Arabia, a Sunni bastion since the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq toppled the Sunni-controlled regime of Saddam Hussein in 2003. So who's really funding the insurgency? Who's really providing the weapons, particularly the serious and deadly weapons that are being used against us? It looks like Saudi Arabia group is. The Iraq Study Group, this is an actual quote from James Baker's, here's the Iraq Study Group, quote, funding for the Sunni insurgency comes from private individuals within Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states, period, end of sentence. Pretty straightforward stuff. The Associated Press story goes on to say, on November 27th, a U.S. Air Force F-16 jet crashed while flying in support of American soldiers fighting Anbar province. Presumably they meant to say fighting in Anbar province, a Sunni insurgent hotbed. Last week, a spokesman for Saddam's ousted Ba'ath Party claimed that fighters armed with a Strela missile had shot down the jet. We have stockpiles, he said, of Strelas, and we are going to surprise the Americans. This is from Kudar al-Murshidi, the spokesman for the Ba'ath Party. He's in Damascus. He would not say how the Strelas were obtained, but, you know, as we pointed out, Saudi Arabia is giving them money and helping them get it. And we're all worried about Iran now? Well, could it be that Bush just needs another war to avoid going to jail? I mean, let us not forget.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves.
And Iran has a whole bunch, too.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on listener-supported radio. Yes, indeed, it's supported by you, our listeners, supporting the local sponsors of our affiliate radio stations. That's really where the rubber meets the road, is the local radio stations. If you hear an advertiser or a local sponsor, let them know you're listening. Patronize their products. You know, visit their place of business and tell your friends. Plus, our national sponsors, of course, like Sacred Grounds Coffee, sacredgroundscoffee.com, Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE for imported French organic wines, and Purina One Natural Blends for just incredible cat and dog food, 1-866-380-MEOW, the stuff that my cat Higgins is addicted to. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Steve in Santa Rosa, California. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on this
morning. Sure, sure. What's up?
Well, I'd like to talk about the weapons that supposedly the neocon administration is putting forward as being Iranian.
Yeah.
But if you look at the pictures that they've put in the media, it's all in English. The lot numbers, the nomenclature, everything is in English. And I'm afraid that the Bushies are fabricating evidence for a political gain.
Do you think it's possible that the Bush administration might do that?
Oh. Well, let me think twice about that.
Yeah, no, they'd never do that, Steve.
Yeah.
No, my point exactly. And I mean, these guys, they lied us into the first war. I mean, here was Bush the winter of 2002 to 2003, just a couple of months before we invaded Iraq. The Downing Street memos and the Downing Street minutes demonstrate that or indicate that in July of 2002.
Yes.
Leading up to the election of 2002, the midterm elections, in July of 2002, Bush went over to England, had a meeting with Blair, according to the equivalent of the Department of Secretary of Defense, whatever it's called, I forget now, there was going to be a war, and they were going to, quote, adjust the intelligence to fit the policy.
Absolutely.
Right? They were going to match the intelligence to fit the policy. So here, 6 months later, Bush still claiming...
You said we're headed to war in Iraq. I don't know why you say that. I hope we're not headed to war in Iraq. I'm the person who gets to decide, not you.
Yeah, right.
Even Frontline, PBS's Frontline, reported on, I think it was Private Armies or some of their mercenary program, reported that 6 months prior to the invasion, we had literally thousands of workers over there building bases.
Yeah, and we're doing it again right now. We're supporting MEC. We're supporting a terrorist organization, which we call a terrorist organization inside Iran. So if you want the nation that's supporting terrorism, here we are, our tax dollars. You've got U.S. Special Forces inside Iran right now.
Yes.
It's all but acknowledged. And now they're talking about a third carrier group going into the Gulf. Steve, I got to move along, but thanks for the call. Good talking to you. Betty in Ronard Park, California. Hey, Betty, what's up?
I would like to say recently I heard there's legislation that called Nye Cunningham, where people in the government who do illegal and corrupt things do not get federal pensions. Well, the last caller and you and everyone else I know agrees that this administration has been corrupt, have lied, have cheated, have gotten us into way over what
so
we
should pull their pensions. Although, you know, frankly, I mean, Bush was born with a multimillion-dollar trust fund.
I don't care.
Cheney's worth
none of them should get pensions, but the money that would be their pension should go to the wounded veterans and the families of those who have died.
I would vote for that in a second, Betty.
Everyone I know would. I would love to make it Molly Ivan's spirit carrying that movement on.
Yeah.
No pensions for this criminal administration.
Yeah, and not just Bush and Cheney, but Wolfowitz and Pearl
Everyone,
and Price and all these guys who are part of it. Amen. Amen. Well said. Thank you very much. Chris in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
No, not much, Tom. You know, it's no wonder the southern part of Iraq has the lowest incidence of attacks on coalition American and British personnel. That's because it's almost exclusively Shia in the southern part of that country. And now the Bush administration wants us to believe, I guess, that there is some sort of large Shia insurgency. I don't buy it. The insurgency is by definition, Sunni. The Shias are more or less hands-off.
Well, they're more or less in control of the government. There was a time when we took on the Shia. You'll recall about a year and a half, or no, it was about 2.5 years ago, Bush decided that he was going to take on Sadr.
The
Mehdi Army in Sadr. And they sent a surge. It was the first surge, actually. They sent a surge into Baghdad to take on Sadr, and five guys were killed. One of those five guys who were on the first day, one of those five guys was Cindy Sheehan's son, Casey Sheehan.
Right.
And, you know, lest we forget. And that was one of the few times that we've actually tried to take on the Shia. But where our helicopters are being shot down and possibly with shoulder-fired missiles, nobody's talking about it. Maybe they're not talking about it because these shoulder-fired missiles are coming from Saudi Arabia, but they're always in the Sunni areas. It's in Anbar province. It's in the Sunni area. We have a Sunni insurgency, not a Shia insurgency. And I am just astounded that the news media in the United States is buying this stuff. That they are, you know, after watching what happened to Judy Miller, watching what happened last time around, they're just buying it. And it just blows my mind. Chris, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Jan in Pensacola, Florida. Hey, Jan.
Hello. Yeah, I'm just trying to understand this filibuster thing.
Yes, sir.
The whole time the Republicans were in the majority, every time the Democrats threatened a filibuster, they said they were going to change the rules and, you know, so they could do a straight up and down vote. The very first time the Republican minority disagreed with the Democrats,
it's filibuster time.
And we never said a word.
Right, I know. Jim, nobody has ever accused the Republican Party of being consistent or of failing to embrace hypocrisy. It's just, you know, you're spot on right, and well said. Pete in San Diego, California. Hey, Pete, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. You know, it brings up the serial numbers on these weapons, brings up an important capability that we apparently have and brings it into public conscious. I think we ought to be searching, get a full report or a hearing on where all the weapons in Iraq are coming from.
Yeah, like these shoulder-fired missiles that the Saudis are supplying.
And take a look
according to the Associated Press.
Take a look at the whole international arms trade, you know, Khashoggi, the whole bit. Let's see where this stuff is coming from.
Right. Yeah, well said. Well said. Michael in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Hey, I just wanted to have a little course correction on the language you're using, and not just you, everybody. When you talk about the neocons being responsible for this, you are letting the rest of the Republican establishment off the hook.
I agree with you. That's why I have not used the word neocon once today.
Okay, you know, call it a couple of minutes.
And it's not just the Republicans, by the way, Michael. There were a bunch of Democrats who voted for this as well.
Well,
I mean, the majority of the Democrats in the House of Representatives voted against giving Bush the authority to go to war, a fact that somehow never seems to make it to any of the talking head shows or into the mainstream media. But a majority of the Democrats in the Senate did vote for this war, and a lot of them are, you know, have apologized for that vote and said, yes, they were mistaken. A lot of them are backpedaling. But, yeah, you're right. It wasn't just the neocons. The neocons were the intellectual architects of some of it, of much of it, the Project for New American Century and all that. But
they couldn't have done it without the rest of the Republicans and Lieberman.
Yeah,
and I don't want to let any of those guys off the hook, and I certainly don't want to let any of those guys off the hook next November.
Yep, you're absolutely right, and you just accomplished your mission, Michael. Thank you. Prez in San Francisco, California. Hey, Prez, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm just great, but I'll get better.
I have a couple of points. I'm going to try to get most of them in. I know you're limited on time here. Isn't it funny that now Iraq has become our Afghanistan with Russia helping the insurgents out?
Hey, Afghanistan is our Afghanistan, Prez. We have lost control of the majority, the majority both population-wise and the majority geographically of Afghanistan. We have lost control of it. Afghanistan has become our Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Afghanistan under the Taliban had essentially stopped producing opium. You know, George Bush gave him $40 million, and they used it to go out and wipe out the opium crops and got the warlords under control. We came in and said, okay, we'll be buddies with you warlord guys, and we're going to take back Afghanistan and get rid of the Taliban. The warlord guys got rid of the Taliban on our behalf, and they went back to growing opium. It's wrong. Bill in Naples, Florida. Prez, thanks for the call. Bill in Naples, Florida. Hey, Bill, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom. A couple of quick points. The vast majority of the American deaths have been caused by Sunni insurgents, and the Shiite Iran is not supporting the Sunnis. Saudi Arabia is giving them their financial support, but you hear nothing about the Saudi connection.
Yeah, other than the occasional story that I shared with you a few minutes ago that got played. It was my clip is out of USA Today, and it appeared for one day, and then it was gone, and that's it, and nobody else is talking about it. Good point, Bill. Jake in Arcata, California. Hey, Jake, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
Great. Well, we have about a half a minute here.
You know, Bush's surge in Iraq is really about an escalation moving across the border into Iran. Even Chuck Hagel has come out and warned the Bush administration about these intentions. And it was all laid out by the Project for the New American Century in their document Rebuilding America's Defenses from September 2000. They wanted to go into Iraq, Iran, Syria. They want a region-wide war, and that's what Bush is pushing. And we need to stop it now before it's too late.
I agree, because it's going to be a disaster of unimaginable proportions. And frankly, not just the disaster in the region. It will be a disaster that will be used by the neo-fascists in this country to further crank down on human rights. I mean, we've already lost the right of habeas corpus because of the Military Commissions Act. This will just make it that much worse. It'll give that much more power to these hypercons, fascists. Let's call them what they are, who want to destroy America. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Let's start this over.
Helping you win the water cooler war is Tom Hartman here, the place where despair is not an option. Get active. Get out there. Participate. It's not enough just to vote every 2 years or every 4 years or however often in some places. We've got annual elections here in Portland, but that's not enough. We have to get active. You have to show up. And not just show up at the demonstration next Thursday and say, here I am with my son. No, show up at the local, at your local political party. Join the Democratic Party. Join the Republican Party. Join the Green Party. Join the Progressive Party. Pick one. Or two. Frankly, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can be a Democrat and a Green at the same time. Get out there, get involved, get active, show up. Democracy for America. I mean, there's just so many progressive Democrats of America. Anyhow, Jeff in Snohomia, end of rant. Jeff in Snohomia, Washington. Hey,
how you doing, Tom?
I'm fine. I think I just mispronounced your town, though.
Snohomish, that's how it is.
Snohomish, there you go. Yeah.
I just got irritated when you were talking to this guy about the CAFE standards and stuff like that.
The thing that makes me crazy is I point out that the fossil fuels are toxic, that they're killing us, and these folks say, well, it's just the price you pay for civilization. I'm sorry, you can have a clean civilization. I believe it. The technology's there.
Yeah, there's all kinds of technologies that are a done deal, and all they need is the backing to get them going.
That's right.
I mean, fuel cell technology.
Sure, but nobody wants big government to have anything to do with it. We've got to wait for the free market. The problem with the free market is the free market deals with problems after the fact, not before the fact.
Yeah. Well, I think, they need to have the CAFE standards more aggressive than is achievable, so that at least we'll get like 50% of the deal and maybe be there.
Well, let's make it more aggressive than achievable, so they'll have an incentive to develop technology that'll achieve something that right now isn't achievable but can be achievable.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is not rocket science. Jeff, thanks for the call. A good point you make. Chris in Seattle. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how you doing? My argument with the petroleum industry is that this is a valuable, valuable commodity. We make millions of products. Plastics come from petroleum. We're sitting here and burning it? That's just stupid business. That's not good business.
That's an excellent point, too. Plus, we make chemicals out of it that we use in various parts of our lives. Pharmaceuticals.
We're burning this?
Yeah.
We're just burning it?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, good point, Chris. Well said. Tommy in Brattleboro, Vermont. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine. What's up?
It's funny how great minds work in the same channels. About your Iran war here. I was just after posting something on iBrattleboro. It's our local community, how would you say it? Citizen blog journalism site. It's really more of a, it's not quite a blog, but it's pretty interesting.
It's like an indie media kind of site.
But anyhow, what I just said is it seems that we're now being told that inscriptions on roadside bombs indicate that they were made in Iran. Surprise, surprise. I'm sure that the inscriptions on other captured weapons will indicate that they were made in Russia, China, Europe, and even Israel and the USA.
Sure.
Hey, that's the nature of the arms trade. You make a weapon and then you sell it. No questions asked.
Right. Well, for that matter, our bullets, most of the bullets that we're using right now, because we can't keep up with the demand for bullets in Iraq, most of our bullets are coming from China and Israel. The majority of them from China. So does that mean that the Arab world is justified in going off and bombing China? I don't think so. It's like, give me a break. Thank you, Tommy. Good point. Well made. Rich in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I read this thing on Yahoo this morning, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it yet. I don't know if you did yet or not, but the Australian Prime Minister calling out Barack Obama.
Mr. Howard?
Yes, saying that the terrorists are praying that Obama wins the 2008 election.
You're kidding. No, I totally missed that. David's on it right now, though. He's looking for it.
And then they asked Barack Obama to comment, and he said, well, if Australia is so ginned up to fight the good fight, why don't they send another 20,000 troops over there?
Well said. I'll track it down for you, Rich. Thank you for the heads up. I appreciate it. It's amazing. I got the smartest, most well-informed listeners on the planet on this program. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I want a call to action, and hopefully not a call to arms, but if necessary. I really think that the Congress and the system we have is completely corrupt. I'm hoping you read the book Uncommon Sense, which I sent to you as a PDF. go back to your email, check that out if you can. But my comment is this. We need to have a goal to become active, and there's two really critical goals that we can set over this next 20-year period to achieve, the first of which is the elimination of the Federal Reserve banking system. Really important. Everyone who's seen From America Freedom to Fascism is aware of why that problem's important. Number two, the military-industrial complex and the corporate profit motive for war has really gotten out of hand, and we have to change something in our
I would take it a step beyond that, and I wrote a book about this called Unequal Protection. I would abolish corporate personhood and just the whole doctrine of corporations as persons. Well said. Ransom in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Ransom, less than a minute. What's up?
Yes, I wanted to comment about the your guest said that scientists once thought the Earth was flat. Well, scientists was a product of the Renaissance. What he was referring to, well, the people who thought that the Earth was flat was basically the church and the uneducated.
You're right. You had scientists who were being persecuted by the church for saying the Earth was round.
Right. It was even the philosophers in classical Greece knew that the Earth was round.
Right. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
You said that libertarians are Republicans who want to have sex and smoke pot.
Yes, sir.
They're Republicans who openly want to do it.
Yeah.
Republicans like to do that, too.
The rest of the Republicans just want to secretly do it. Good. Well said, Ransom. They're the honest Republicans or the libertarians. Well said. 56 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People of the United States of America, an extraordinary and noble country that we can make better day by day by getting involved in our political process. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you. Coming up on 6 minutes past the hour. Greg Palast is with us. He's the author of the New York Times bestseller Armed Madhouse. Who's afraid of Osama Wolf? China floats. Bush sinks. The scheme to steal 08. No child's behind left. And other dispatches from the front lines of the class war. Hey, and GregPalast.com, of course, his website. Greg, welcome.
Glad to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you with us. I'm fascinated by the fact that you were able, apparently, to interview Hugo Chavez.
Yeah, the president of Venezuela. I understand, according to George Bush, that he's going steady with Fidel Castro. That's a new line.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we've actually invited him to come on this program. Does he speak English?
Well, actually, no, he's learning a bit of English, but though he was able to quote Walt Whitman at length to me.
In English?
Yeah.
Huh.
At any rate, but of course our president's interest in Hugo Chavez is not his relationship with Fidel Castro. We're already being set up for the next war, which, by the way, won't be Iran, but there will be some type of Cold War with Venezuela. I'm sure this is a coincidence, but all this attack on Hugo Chavez, I don't think it's related, but it may have something to do with the fact that apparently now he has the world's largest reserve of oil, even bigger than Saudi Arabia's.
Yeah.
Do you think oil has anything to do with this?
Why is it that we just never attack countries whose primary product is broccoli?
Yeah. So, I mean, and the big problem with Hugo Chavez, he's more than happy to sell us his oil. Why not?
He's doing it.
Yeah. I mean,
you can buy it in any Citgo station in the United States. There is a problem, though. He does have, you said he has more oil in Saudi Arabia. I've heard the same claim made of Canada with their tar sands.
Yes, that's true. Because what's happened is the price of oil rises. under $30 a barrel, it's only the cheap liquid stuff that bubbles out of the Mideast sands that's available, and Saudi Arabia has most of that. Right. What Chavez and Canada have are the gunky, gooey junk, tar sands in Canada, and what's called extra heavy oil in Venezuela. And that's all.
It's like liquid asphalt.
Yeah, it's junk. It's liquid asphalt, but there's a lot more of that than anything Saudi Arabia can have, and obviously, George's and Dick are very, very concerned that the Hugo Chavez, not that he won't sell it to us, but that he is not playing ball with their buddies in Saudi Arabia and OPEC. And that's a big, big, big problem. That's what's really behind this current push against him, is the politics of OPEC, the oil cartel.
Let me take this a step further and reality test this with you, Greg Palast, because this is what I think we saw coming out of World War II as we went into the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Although Stalin was not a good guy, and so it may not be, but it seems to me that there's also an ideological war here.
Yes.
What you have is an economic system in the United States, capitalism, which many people believe to also be a political system. You've got the libertarians and the objectivists, the Ayn Rand folks, who all say, you know, basically we shouldn't have a government, maybe to have an army, but that's it.
We're getting there.
and leave everything to the capitalists. And then you've got, on the other side, you've got folks like Hugo Chavez and Sweden and, you know, countries that where they nationalize the resources, the major resources of the country. They nationalize things that are natural monopolies like power systems, water systems, things like that, so that everybody collectively owns them, the schools, the healthcare system. And, our conservative politicians refer to that as socialism or communism or whatever. I mean, they slap labels. They throw labels around freely. And there's, frankly, I think, a fear among the hyper-wealthy in the United States that their wealth may be at risk if we were to nationalize some of our natural resources and if we were to go back to what we had in the United States from 1935 to 1980, where the top marginal tax rate is 90%. And that's the kind of thing that Chavez is doing.
Yeah, it's really Chavez. Think of Chavez not as the Fidel Castro of Venezuela, but more like the Franklin Roosevelt. It's about a new deal. You had, like South Africa, a country where 20% of the population is white and owned everything, 80% is dark-skinned and owned nothing. He's, you know, like Mandela, you know, he's talking about not only civil rights, but economic rights for that 80%, and some basic social welfare and spreading their tremendous oil wealth, which he's actually accomplished. And as his, you know, there was an attempted, for those who don't know it, in 2002 there was an attempted coup d'etat which was backed by the U.S. The president of Venezuela, Chavez, was kidnapped by the Chamber of Commerce. Talk about a corporate takeover. This gave it a whole new concept. There was a corporate
takeover. Well, it's basically what Smedley Butler was asked to participate with against Roosevelt in 36.
That's right. So there was a coup d'etat. It did fail. They had to bring Chavez back to his desk. And when I talked I was able to get a cell phone line into Venezuela in the middle of the coup d'etat while the president was being held hostage. And one of his few ministers who hasn't been seized said to me, you know, they can't let him survive because he's a dissenter from the new global order. Well, there's this new right-wing globalization order. And under which we are all, not just, you know, South America's under attack, but, you know, people in the southern Utah are under attack. That is, taking away social security, social welfare, your basic right to a basic standard of living, which we won in the United States under Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal. They can't allow the reversal of the kind of Reaganite, Bushite philosophy. And Chavez, with his oil wealth, has been able to pretty much change the flow of the political direction in South America back towards a kind of populist,
right,
and economic order.
And it's contagious.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what's happening now in Bolivia and Chile and Argentina. It's spreading around. It almost happened in Mexico.
That's right. So they can't let this guy stand because he's, you know, so they would rather paint him, you know, that we're back to Red Scare. He's Castro, he's the commie.
Yeah.
You know,
now, Greg Palast, you said that you feel that the next war is going to be a cold war with Venezuela rather than a hot war with Iran.
That's right.
I'm looking at what's going on here. I'm looking at what's going on here between the headlines, unnamed military sources. Nobody's willing to put their name on this thing. Nobody's willing to go on the record, but all of a sudden the headlines are Iran is supplying the IEDs that are killing our soldiers. There's no discussion whatsoever of the Saudi supply of shoulder-fired missiles that seem to be bringing down helicopters or all the money for, you know,
that's right. What's going on here is a wider war over oil. Iran and Venezuela are very upset with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia's basic plan is to raise the price of oil through the ceiling, which we've seen, and then drop it to the floor, which would be very destructive to the economies of Iran and Venezuela. So what we're seeing in Iraq is just a hot front in a cold war between members of OPEC, and the House of Bush has allied itself with the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia. Kind of, you think of the White House as kind of an outhouse of the House of Saud.
Uh-huh.
And what's happening is that part of the reason we are pushing against Iran. I mean, they've never been exactly sweet to us. This is not news. The reason why we're pushing against Venezuela is that they are challenging the power of Saudi Arabia within OPEC. They do not want to see the price of oil bounce up and down. In fact, when I spoke with the President Chavez, he offered us a pretty good deal. He said, look, let's just lock the price of oil at $50 a barrel. Good for you. It's cheaper than it's been for years. Good for us. We can count on a minimum price of oil. So let's make a deal, people to people. Well, that type of talk just can't be allowed because the Saudi Arabians count on the fact that the price of oil goes through the ceiling, then drops to the floor. And again,
why?
You know, the reason they want it to go to the ceiling, obviously, is to make monster money. It goes to the floor because they want to knock out alternatives. That is, all you guys with your solar panels and it also
shuts down Iran to a certain point.
The
Saudis have said, one of the Saudi ministers about 3 weeks ago said that if Iran really started seriously acting out, that they would drop the price of oil to $20 a barrel and cut off the funding for Iran.
You got it right. In fact, the so-called October surprise, which was that sudden $20 drop in the price of oil before the U.S. midterm elections, was as much to punish Iran by Saudi Arabia as it was to help little George in the midterms. It didn't do much of either, but that's what's going on here, isn't it? Is a fight over who controls the world supply of oil. Is it going to be the kind of Bush-Saudi Arabian axis? Is it going to be Venezuela-Iran? So that's what's really going on. It's all about the OIL, the oil.
Fascinating stuff. Greg Palast, the author of the New York Times bestseller Armed Madhouse. You can check out his website at gregpalast.com. Greg, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Bye.
Always great talking to you. 16 minutes past the hour. Our number 866-440-8466. Back with your calls and more news of the day right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Support group Bob Byatt for We the People of the United States of America. And congratulations indeed to the Dixie Chicks once again. Let's take a quick look at what's going on with the ongoing U.S. occupation of Iraq. If we can make our machine work here.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight and to die. And there are lives in the balance.
The The following are security developments in Iraq as of 10:55 Greenwich Mean Time on Monday. These compiled by Reuters. Dateline Baghdad, a car bomb killed at least 59 people and wounded 77 in the Sahara district. In a wholesale market in central Baghdad today, one building and several cars were engulfed in flames as rescue services attempted to evacuate casualties. In Garma, the bodies of five Iraqi soldiers were found in that small western town after they were kidnapped by insurgents. In Baghdad, a bomb killed five people and wounded 30 when it targeted shoppers in the central Bab el-Sharji district. In Baghdad, a bomb killed two people and wounded five others when it exploded in the mainly Shiite district of Qahira. In Baghdad, Iraqi security forces found 27 bodies scattered across the city on Sunday, bearing signs of torture and gunshot wounds. In Mosul, police found the bodies of three people, including a student in the northern city of Mosul. In Baghdad, insurgents killed one bodyguard for an interior ministry employee and wounded another when they attacked her vehicle in a drive-by shooting. In Samawa, gunmen killed one policeman in that southern city. Also in Samawa, gunmen killed a former intelligence officer in Saddam Hussein's feared secret police. And in Mosul, six policemen were wounded after clashes between insurgents and police. Meanwhile, John Howard, as one of our callers mentioned a little earlier, John Howard, the Prime Minister of Australia, who's in the tank with regard to his popularity ratings, he's following George Bush right down the tube. When Barack Obama announced that he was running for president, Howard said, quote, if I was running Al-Qaeda in Iraq, I would put a circle around March 2008 and pray as many times as possible for a victory, not only for Obama, but also for the Democrats. George, this is really the kind of help you need. Yeah. So in response, Obama, the senator from Illinois, said, quote, well, I think it's flattering that one of George Bush's allies on the other side of the world started attacking me the day after I announced. I would also note that we have close to 140,000 troops in Iraq, and my understanding is Mr. Howard has deployed 1,400. So if he's to fight the good fight in Iraq, I would suggest that he call up another 20,000 Australians and send them to Iraq. Otherwise, it's just a bunch of empty rhetoric. To which, and this ran, by the way, in the News of Australia, The Age, it's one of the major news, Australian newspapers, with a headline, Put Up or Shut Up, Obama Tells Howard, which led Howard to say, and Foreign Minister Alexander Downer to say, it's entirely appropriate the Australian government expresses its view of a free world. You won't get anywhere trying to close down debate. Of course, what Howard was trying to do was stifle any criticism of him and Bush, right? Go after Obama. Oh, my. And meanwhile, this in Newsweek, the cover story, The Hidden War with Iraq, with Iran, excuse me, the newest edition, the brand new edition of Newsweek. Not yet on the stands, Michael Hirsch and Mazyar Bahari. The article headlined Blow Up, America's Hidden War with Iran. This nugget. At least one former White House official contends that some Bush advisors secretly want an excuse to attack Iran. Hillary Mann, the administration's former Security Council director for Iran and Persian Gulf Affairs, said, quote, they intend to be as provocative as possible and make the Iranians do something America would be forced to retaliate for. End of quote. Second Navy carrier group is steaming toward the Persian Gulf as we speak, and Newsweek has learned that a third carrier will likely follow. They note, this from the Newsweek piece, Iran shot off a few missiles in those same tense waters last week in a highly publicized test. Add to that, the guy who replaced Scooter Libby. He's not quite the household name of Scooter Libby, but Cheney's top national security aide. John Hanna, said, and this is in the Washington Post today, it's on page A18 in the 10th paragraph. Well, here's the entire paragraph. Some senior administration officials still relish the notion of a direct confrontation. One ambassador in Washington said he was taken aback when John Hanna, Vice President Cheney's national security advisor, said during a recent meeting that the administration considers 2007, quote, the year of Iran, end quote, and indicated that a U.S. attack was a real possibility. That's the news, Scooter Libby. 27 minutes past the hour. Back with your calls and news right after this.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone here in the People's Republic of, what did Bush Sr. call it? Little Beirut. the People's Republic of Portland, Oregon, from our home station, AM 620 KPOJ. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room and say hi, hang out with some of the finest minds in the entire universe. Yeah, somehow they all end up there. Steve in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just wanted to personally coin the phrase corporate communism, because I think that the people on the left need a little kind of soundbite blurb. I mean, the right's already almost taken the word communism and socialism all for themselves, and anything that goes against just complete corporate America, already you're a communist. I think next time we hear someone say, oh, government interference in business is the problem with America, you say, oh, so you're a corporate communist. You advocate a small amount of people controlling all the wealth and distributing it according to their personal agenda.
Yeah, it's sort of the Politburo what is it called, the conference board, I think it is, or whatever. There's this group of the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations in America. John Snow used to be the president of it. And interesting. You know, what's really interesting, Steve, about all that you raise is this notion that somehow capitalism, laissez-faire capitalism, absolutely unregulated, unfettered capitalism,
has
anything at all to do with government. Because the fact of the matter is that in China right now, and I don't know if you saw Parade magazine over the weekend, Hu Hintao, the dictator of China, was listed as one of the 10 worst dictators in the world. You know, I mean, they execute people routinely. They execute them to get their organs. They have forced, you know, slave labor. I mean, on and on it goes.
Tiananmen Square.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is the worst face of communism in a way that Karl Marx certainly never imagined. And yet they are the corporate manufacturing floor for the United States. So
yeah,
interesting. Good point. Steve, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Deb in Minnesota. Hey, Deb, what's up?
Hi. Great show. I'd like to ask you, what do you think the likelihood is that the Iraqis purchase the weapons from Iran versus our direct Iran action, or that they're a U.S. plant, and the likelihood that in order to escalate and continue the war, we possibly had help from the United States in bombing the mosques?
Well, to deal with the last first, I think it's pretty clear that that was an attempt by Sunni folks, excuse me, the newly acquired Al-Qaeda bunch to fight back at the Shia. Although, you know, who knows? Actually, there's a large conspiracy theory in the Middle East that it was the Shia blowing up the mosque in order to start a holy war against the Sunnis. But I think that was between the two of them. I don't think there was anything in it for us to blow up that mosque. On the other hand, you know, what about all these weapons? If in my mind, if there was anything really solid here, you would not have anonymous sources. You'd have, you know, you would have people coming forward saying, here's the evidence and here's who I am. And there's all these anonymous sources in the military. I mean, the military said this CNN story. This is incredible. I mean, this is from CNN. The first sentence, the U.S. military Sunday presented, U.S. officials have made general statements. The officials have focused on, the U.S. military officials said, also the U.S. military says, the U.S. military said, the military officials, according to the U.S. military, those were the first four words of the first seven paragraphs of the CNN story. And I'm sorry, there is not a uniform and unified voice for the U.S. military, or if there is, I suppose it's the spokesperson for the Department of Defense. And if that's the case, then this is Gates speaking. And if that's the case, then we're back to Don Rumsfeld. Gee, let's have another war. And it's just a whole grim thing. I'm very concerned about it. Deb, thank you for the call. Leonard in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Leonard, what's on your mind today?
Hey, hello, sir. It's sure good to talk to you again. Hey, I'm just calling to let you know that John McCain does not speak for the rest of Arizona. And to show you that, I and a group of friends have now officially filed the Recall John McCain Committee with the Secretary of State's office, since John McCain signed a pledge of recall if he enough signatures were gathered against him that he would follow that according to our law, 19-221.
Interesting. Now, are you a Republican, Leonard?
No, I'm an Iraqi war vet, but I'm the chairman. I happen to be a Democrat, but the treasurer is an independent, William Crum, out in the West Valley of Phoenix, Arizona, and we are hopefully going to be having Republicans sitting on the committee, because this is not a Democratic thing, Tom, or Republican or Libertarian. It's an American thing and an Arizonan thing. We don't like it when people such as Mr. McCain try to say that habeas corpus through their actions are not good, or sending 20,000 more of my fellow soldiers to die. We don't think that's right. And when our senator we elected to stand up in Congress or in the Senate as a check and balance against the chief executive who's become a king, does nothing, we don't like that. So yeah, we're about ready to tell him we're going to get the signatures, and we're gathering them fast, even though the right-wing media in Arizona continues to ignore us. We are officially filed now.
Well, good on you, Leonard, and I hope the local media picks it up. Thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for the heads up.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Good talking with you. Scott in Houston, Texas. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. How you doing, buddy?
Good.
Hey, Tom, I want to get your opinion on something. I'm not sure how well-versed you are with this technology, but it's basically using waves, and I think Ireland's kind of at the forefront of this.
Yeah.
Using just basically the repetitive motion of the waves. It's free. It generates, you know, hydroelectric power. It's
yep.
always going to be there. There's no
There was a product. There was a great big piece on this in the Oregonian, the local newspaper here in Oregon, in Portland. Yeah, well, it's a statewide newspaper, about, because we have a huge coastline. And basically what you do is you sink a pole into the floor of the ocean that's not moving, and then up near the top of that, at sea level, you know, at the top of the water level, you put a floating, what would you call it, cylinder, I guess, that is buoyant, and it rocks up and down on the pole, and you have magnets on the pole, and you have coils in the thing that rocks up and down, and the wave motion and the tide motion generates electricity. Yeah, technology exists, actually.
Yeah, if people look it up on the Internet, I think, like you said, I think Ireland's kind of at the forefront of it. And, I mean, this is it's like a zero-emission type thing. It's absolutely free. Can you imagine if they just put, say, $10 billion into this technology?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are so many things that could be done. This is all apropos of our interview in the first hour, I'm assuming, with Craig Smith. There is so much that could be done to replace fossil fuels, and not just because we're dependent upon the Middle East for them, and not just because it's sucking our economy dry, but also because the fossil fuels are so toxic. I mean, here, you know, like I said, here in the Pacific Northwest, we got all this benzene that's causing cancers and things. Well, there's all kinds of chemicals that are coming out of people's tailpipes all over the country. And we really, for our own health, if for nothing else. And then, of course, you know, there's the whole global warming issue. Good point, Scott. Thank you very much. You made it well. Trevor in Port Orchard, Washington. Hey, Trevor, welcome to the program.
Hey, how's it going? Love your show.
Thank you.
Love your show. But I was just wondering if everybody knew, if we went into Iran, we'd be going at the Ayatollah and all this holy war thing that they're going on with all
yep.
coming up.
We're halfway there already. Yep. We're halfway there already. All over the Middle East, these guys are, you know, folks, citizens all across the Middle East, and actually Muslims all across the world. Indonesia, I think, is the country that has the largest Muslim population in the world. You do public opinion polls, and what you find is that they think that there is some element of Christianity and perhaps Judaism that's involved in coloring the thinking of our going to war against this Islamic country. In other words, they see this as a religious war, a lot of them.
Oh. Yeah, not
a good thing, Trevor. Definitely not a good thing.
Energy thing, if they got reactors on submarines and carriers, why can't they use atomic energy outside of those?
Well, because there's a couple of problems. One, atomic energy is not all that efficient. It takes, according to Helen Caldicott, it takes about 16 years before a nuclear power plant actually produces any electricity that's actually purely from the nuclear sources, because so much oil goes into building the nuclear reactor, so much oil goes into mining the uranium, so much oil goes into transporting the uranium, so much oil goes into refining the uranium, forming it into fuel rods, putting it in the reactor, monitoring the reactor, you know, all that, you add all that stuff up, and it takes 16 to 18 years of the reactor operating before it's generated enough electricity to replace the energy value of all that oil. It's just not all that efficient. For a nuclear submarine, it's small. It's compact. I mean, it's a very concentrated form of energy. But for a city, I don't think the question is how concentrated it is. The question is how efficient it is. And nuclear energy, not to mention the fact, and that's all of that is completely ignoring the fact that, you know, what are you going to do with the waste when you're done? So, Jude in Seattle. Hey, Jude, what's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning, Tom.
Hey, Jude.
I read an article that was really quite concerning. It was out of the New York Times, and it was on the 10th of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And it deals with two facilities in the state, one down in Texas and one up in Pennsylvania. And they have interesting names. One is the Don T. Hutto Family Residential Center, and the other one is the Burks Family Shelter Care in Pennsylvania. And they house individuals throughout the world, not just Mexico, on any kind of immigration concerns. And one of the facilities in Texas holds 400, and out of that they have 170 children, and the same one in Pennsylvania. Now, I understand, as being a progressive, that I need to look at both sides, and I understand there are problems.
Hang on just a second. Let me get this straight, Jude. Are you telling me that we have privatized prisons and that, for example, the families that were busted in the big meatpacking plant, they and their families are in these private prisons?
Well, they don't specify, but they're saying that we have children. We have children down there.
Send me a link on that. I want to track down some more information on that.
The Texans United for Families.
Okay, Texans United for Families. David will track it down. Jude, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate the heads up. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now, one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't to be witched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denounced their man. These patriots rolled up their sleeves and took matters in hand.
Let's meet all the Dixie chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin. Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again.
And welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program, 9 minutes before the hour here. Yeah, well, the Dixie Chicks got their, as they say, success is the best revenge last night. This interesting story just out from U.S. News and World Report, usnews.com, the website. A federal judge has ruled that a CIA agent identified only as Doe, not even John or Jane, just Doe, allegedly fired after he gathered pre-war intelligence showing that Iraq was not developing weapons of mass destruction, can proceed with his lawsuit against the CIA. This is the second setback for the government in this case, according to U.S. News. In January, Judge Kessler decided on technical grounds that the CIA employee's lawsuit could not be dismissed. However, the judge did not rule on the agent's central claim that he was fired because he refused to alter intelligence. He was fired because he refused to alter intelligence that contradicted the Bush administration's central rationale for the war in Iraq. In that earlier ruling, Kessler said that the covert agent could plausibly argue that his firing was based on allegedly false information placed in his personnel file. Krieger said that his client had gathered intelligence from several countries in the Middle East, including Iraq. The CIA agent has alleged in his suit that supervisors told him they would notify President Bush that he had found contradictory information, but that they failed to follow through on their promise. Amazing. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Marjorie in San Francisco. Hey, Marjorie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I love your show.
Thank you.
There was an interesting letter to the editor in a couple of days ago in the San Francisco Chronicle, and it's from a 90-year-old woman, and I thought it's a way out of Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just read you the relevant paragraph. I recently read that we're spending $10 billion a month in Iraq. I suggest we tell Iraqi government officials that we will give them a check for $10 billion if they will ensure our troops are brought home safely with no casualties and that the violence between the Shiites and Sunnis stops. If they comply and the violence stops, we will give them another $10 billion for another 6 months. Isn't that a terrific idea?
Yeah, it's basically, you know, yeah.
It is
a variation on the Marshall Plan, you know. I mean, after World War II, nobody, not one American soldier, died as a result of hostile fire in Europe or in Germany.
Because they knew that was they would be supported.
Because we came, well, it was twofold. It was actually two reasons. Number one, we came in with a lot of cash, and we gave it to the local government and helped rebuild the institutions. It wasn't Bechtel that went in and rebuilt Germany. It was German companies. And so we helped them rebuild their own infrastructure, and there was an acknowledgement of the reality of that. And secondly, and this is a really important point, And this is why when people say, oh, you know, you can bomb people into democracy, look at what happened with Germany, they don't understand what, or Japan, they don't understand what really happened. Something very odd was going on in both Germany and Japan. In both cases, you had countries that had become cults. You had cult leaders.
Yeah.
Who literally had developed a religion around themselves. There was a religion that was around Hitler. He was viewed by many people in Germany as literally the reincarnation of Jesus or something close to it. The same with the emperor in Japan. You had people willing to commit suicide for him, flying their planes, you know, the kamikaze pilots, onto the decks of U.S. aircraft carriers. And in both cases, you had countries that had gone insane. There was mass insanity. People were victims of a cult mentality in both Germany and Japan. And when, after World War II, the horrors of the rape of Nanking and the incredible violence of the Japanese soldiers was presented to the Japanese people, and when the horrors of the Holocaust were presented to the German people, that was that moment of deprogramming. That was that, you know, waking up and realizing that, you know, that this is not Jonestown. You know, that Jim Jones is not a good guy. And that was that. And as they awakened from that trance, they said, okay, we'll come back and become part of the civilized world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole different thing from going into Iraq and trying to bomb people into democracy, where they're saying, hey, wait a minute, you're occupying our country and you're bringing in your people and you're paying them $150,000 a year to do stuff that we'll do for $500 a month. It's so insane and so corrupt. It is. Whoop, I'm sorry, Marjorie. I just dropped you there without intending to. Anyhow, John in Marin County, we've got about 30 seconds. John, what's up?
Oh, well, I appreciate you being there for the thinking person's progressive voice. You mentioned a couple of weeks ago regarding the 04 presidential count in Ohio. You mentioned that there were a couple of people convicted there, and I wonder if we could follow up on that. Do you have any new news on that?
No, other than that there were two people who were convicted of tampering with the vote in Ohio, and I don't know that it's gone any farther than that, John. I am on all the email lists for all the folks who keep track of that kind of stuff, so I'm sure if there was any news on it between then, I mean, it's only been a month or so, between then and now that we would know about it. So I'll keep you up to date.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot. Good to talk to you. 56 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for we the people of the United States of America. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, so how do we take care of us? I mean, it's a fairly simple question. How do we take care of us? That's one of the core reasons why you have society, right? Why you have civilization, why you have community, why we have family. Why we have, I mean, all of these various things to take care of us. We're here. This was one of the founding ideas of America. Ben Franklin started a fire company. In fact, the water buckets that everybody had to have in their home in Philadelphia to be a member of the fire department did not have flat bottom. They were conical so that you couldn't set it down. You couldn't goof off. If you were on the bucket brigade, you had to work. The idea that we take care of us, that we're a nation of barn builders, that we help each other out, this is central to the foundation of this country. We didn't come here as one person. We came here as groups of people. We came here as communities. We've always been communities. So how do we take care of us when it comes to our health? Michael Blood wrote this article for the Associated Press that I found in the Oregonian last week, our local paper, but you know, I'm sure it's all over the country. And I just have to share a piece of this with you because it is such a brilliant and horrifying, frankly, illustration of what happens when a healthcare system becomes a for-profit healthcare system. Well, let me preface this by saying that I'm old enough to remember when our healthcare system was not by and large, a for-profit healthcare system, or at least in the state where I grew up, in Michigan. And I know it was true in most states across the United States. I don't believe that these were federal laws. I believe they were state laws because they're changing state by state. But in Michigan, when I was growing up, a hospital had to be a not-for-profit corporation. You could not have a hospital that was not-for-profit. And so the hospitals were owned. I remember, you know, Ingham County Hospital, Kent County Hospital in Grand Rapids, Ingham County Hospital in Lansing, St. Lawrence. It was organized by the Catholic Church. I mean, every hospital was a not-for-profit. Why? Because they wanted to make sure that the first business that the hospital was all about was providing healthcare services, not making a profit, that their first mission was to provide services. Similarly, the health insurance companies had to be not-for-profit. Blue Cross Blue Shield in Michigan was a non-profit corporation. Now, all this started changing during the Reagan era. Reagan came along and said, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's nothing that a for-profit company can, or that a not-for-profit company can do that a for-profit company can't do better. After all, greed is good. Profit motive, it'll help you out. And here now, 26 years later, you know, after Reagan infected us with this, and the profit motive spread across America, and people like Bill Frist's daddy became one of the 100 richest men in America, worth $4 or $5 billion, as a result of going in and buying up these county not-for-profit hospitals and flipping them for profit and crashing the wages of salaries and cutting out services to people and saying, oh, we're only going to care for profitable patients. This is how the Frist family fortune was made. While Bill was a teenager going to the local Humane Society and adopting cats so he could take them home and kill them and surgically dissect them. I guess he always knew he wanted to be a doctor, right? I find that bizarre, but in any case, that's what Bill Frist did as a kid for fun. Here's the story. Michael Blood, the Associated Press. Even on Skid Row, it was shocking. A paraplegic man in a soiled gown sliding along the sidewalk on his hands, clutching a plastic bag with his belongings between his teeth. Police said the man, who was dragging a broken colostomy bag behind him,
was dumped on the sidewalk Thursday in one of the worst parts of the city. This is Dateline Los Angeles. In one of the worst parts of the city by the driver of a hospital van. The area is the same location where city officials say hospitals have dumped the homeless before. Witnesses began shouting, "Where is his wheelchair?" Detective Russ Long said Friday. They told officers the driver responded, it was the driver of the hospital van who dumped this guy, that the man had defecated in the van and had to be removed. Quote, "He was sliding along on his bottom using his hands. He had a hospital property bag in his mouth, in his teeth, and he was trailing a colostomy bag which was malfunctioning." End quote. This is from a witness. Witnesses told police a van from Hollywood Presbyterian Medical Center pulled up to a tiny park near downtown at 10:45 in the morning on Thursday. A side door opened, and a man dressed in a green hospital gown and pants began struggling to get out. The driver looked on. Quoting Detective Russ Long, quote, "His pants fell around his ankles. He fell onto the curb with his legs dangling out into the street," Long said. Homeless people in the area helped the disoriented man into the park. A police bicycle patrol arrived by chance within a minute and called an ambulance. The 41-year-old man's name was not released, but he was wearing a bracelet from the hospital. Dan Springer, a medical center spokesman, did not confirm or deny that the van carrying the man came from Hollywood Presbyterian. Police did not disclose the condition of the man who was taken to another hospital. Welcome to for-profit healthcare in the United States. I mean, this is the Los Angeles Times told the same story. They went a little deeper. They pointed out, they said, Los Angeles officials have accused more than a dozen hospitals, as well as some outside law enforcement agencies, of dumping patients and criminals on Skid Row. 3 months ago, the L.A. City Attorney's Office sought its first indictment accusing Kaiser Permanente of dumping homeless patients on the street. The charges stem from an incident last March when a demented 63-year-old Kaiser Permanente patient was videotaped as she stepped from a taxi in gown and socks and then wandered Skid Row. The city's attorney is considering filing charges against other medical facilities. And then they sent their columnist, LA Times columnist Steve Lopez, out to live for a week as a homeless person. And there's a four-part series about that, complete with video, at the LA Times website. This is called homeless dumping. They say it has plagued the downtown area. As Los Angeles Police Department Detective Russ Long said, "I can't think of anything colder than that. There was no mission around, no services. It's the worst area of Skid Row." The only way they were able to connect the van, by the way, to Hollywood Presbyterian was because witnesses wrote down a phone number on the van and took down its license plate number. This is our healthcare system? I mean, this so illustrates the need for us to functionally, fundamentally, foundationally do something about changing the way healthcare is delivered in the United States. We pay in this country, on average, if you take the total number of dollars that we spend on healthcare in our country and divide it by the number of people in this country, and that's all the people, not just the insured people, all the people. If you divide the total number of dollars spent on health care in the United States and divide it by the population of the United States, 300 and some odd million, you come up with a little over $5,000 per person. That's what we're spending on health care right now. In Canada, it's about $3,000 per person. In France, it's about $2,600 per person. In Germany, it's about $2,800 per person. In England, it's around $2,800, $2,900 per person. No other country in the world is spending more than $4,000 per person. In Japan, it's around $2,500 per person. Why? Because they don't have these blood-sucking leeches called the for-profit medical industry on the back of their healthcare system. You had William McGuire, the head of the second-largest health insurance company in the United States, just took home a $1.78 billion paycheck. That's $1,780 million. And he never cared for a single patient, although the guy was an MD. All he did was move dollars from place to place and generate enormous profits for his shareholders, his stockholders. This is nuts. This is absolutely nuts. It is time for a national health care system in this country, and it's time for our politicians to be addressing this up front. So far, the only national politician that I've running for president that I've seen really and seriously address this is John Edwards. Well, and Dennis Kucinich as well. Dennis Kucinich also. We need to bring this to the front burner. I mean, this is the survival of us, of we the people. What are we going to do about this? What would you do about this? 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, the place where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. I really don't think so. Franklin Roosevelt.
I see one third of a nation ill housed, ill clad, ill nourished.
And he did something about it. He created Social Security, he created the WPA, he created the CCC. He said, we've got to do something about this. We're all in this together. This is the fundamental cleavage between the conservative and liberal worldviews. The conservative worldview is that we are a nation of Daniel Boones. We all put on our coonskin cap and go off into the wilderness and do something all by ourselves. And the traditional American worldview that from George Washington saying, I hope I shall ever see America at the forefront of liberality has been that we are a nation of barn builders. We are a nation of community. We're a nation who pulls together, who makes things happen collectively. We have among us people who are dying, and we have the ability, and frankly, at no cost to ourselves, to fix it simply by making structural changes. In fact, we would save about $2,000 per person per year if we had a national single-payer health care program. This is not rocket science. 1-866-440-THOM is our telephone number. Yarmila in Eureka?
Yes, yes. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
I have a question, and since you are a very wise man, I would like you to figure it out. I came to U.S. from communist country, and I can tell you about a lot of very bad, horrible things.
Yes, I'm
but
sure.
But I have to admit there was a handful, just a little handful, really good things,
mm-hmm.
like the socialized health care,
mm-hmm.
free child care, free preschool, free after-school care, free higher education. With universities, it was complicated. It was just mostly for communist kids.
Mm-hmm.
But four-year colleges and trade schools were free and available to anybody, everybody.
What country was this in your middle?
Czechoslovakia.
Uh-huh.
And so now we have government that is so much against the handful of good things that actually existed in that hellhole. They are against it. But all the most horrible things, Bush is lovingly embracing, adopting every trick from KGB manual. All of a sudden, all these gulags and secret prison and torture,
mm-hmm. yeah.
kangaroo courts, to sneak and peek, searching your house without court order, monitoring phone calls and email, opening letters. He called it important tool, in war on terror, I think this country is turning into a hellhole just like the one I left.
I'm sorry to hear that. Although I don't disagree with you that we are losing our freedoms, we are losing our liberties in this country, and it's a dangerous, dangerous thing and a tragic thing. Point made, Carmela. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome.
It's a very thoughtful perspective. We are adopting the very worst of that system. I submitted a piece to Common Dreams last night. You know, we'll see if they run it today. In fact, I should probably take a look and see if they've put it up yet. In which I tell the story, they haven't yet, which I've told before on this program of Khrushchev, you know, getting up and he was before the Politburo, and this is a story I heard from somebody in Kaliningrad when I was working in Russia, this was after the fall of communism. I'd been in the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union. I'd been in East Germany when it was East Germany. These were not forms of government that any of us, I think, would want to live under. And Khrushchev, when Stalin died and Khrushchev took over, Khrushchev was speaking before the Politburo and he was denouncing Stalin for basically abusing habeas corpus, for doing away with habeas corpus, for imprisoning people without due process, which is a right that we lost last September when Congress passed the Military Commissions Act, or more technically in October when Bush signed it. And so anyhow, Khrushchev has given his speech, and somebody in the, denouncing Stalin, and somebody in the back of the room yells, "Where were you?" And now, keep in mind, Khrushchev was sitting in the Politburo for 20 years during Stalin's time. So somebody in the back yells, "Why didn't you speak up when you were sitting back here? Why are you saying this now?" And Khrushchev looks around. He says, "Who said that?" And everybody's silent. And he says, "Who said that?" And everybody's just terrified silent. And he starts pounding his fist on the table, going, "Who said that?" And nobody, these guys are not even breathing. And he cracks a smile, and then he looks around the room and he says, "Now you know why I didn't speak out when I was sitting where you're sitting." And is that the direction we want to go? Is that the kind of country we want to have? I really don't think so. And yet we have a government that will out a CIA agent to punish somebody for speaking out against the government, take down his wife, who has arrested and imprisoned two U.S. citizens so far, and maybe others. The number of total disappeared Americans is classified. Two U.S. citizens, without due process, broken at least one of them, sent the other one off to be tortured. Strange things. 26 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the place where our talking points come from, Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. Okay, I'm reading the White House website, the official whitehouse.gov website. This is a news release from December 4th, 1204, 2006, last December. This is what? 2 months ago? 3 months ago? This is, what is today, February 11th or something like that, 12th? Mouse over. It's the 12th. Today's February 12th. So this is from December 4th, more or less 2 months ago. George W. Bush speaking to his guest. "Your Eminence, welcome back to the Oval Office. This is the second opportunity I've had to meet with one of the distinguished leaders of a free Iraq. This is a man whose family suffered unbelievable violence at the hands of the dictator Saddam Hussein. He lost nearly 60 family members, and yet rather than being bitter, he's involved with helping the new government succeed. We talked about a lot of important issues today. I appreciate so very much His Eminence's commitment to a unity government. I assured him that the United States supports his work and the work of the Prime Minister to unify the country. I very much appreciate His Eminence's strong position against the murder of innocent life. We talked about the need to give the government of Iraq more capability as quickly as possible so that the elected government can do more, can do that which the Iraqi people want. And then the leader of SCURI. This is a word that's going to come into the American lexicon fairly quickly, I suspect. S-C-I-R-I. SCURI. SCURI stands for the Supreme Council of Islamic Revolution in Iraq. It's the they are rivals to Muqtada al-Sadr. They are Shia, and they are the largest political party in Iraq. And their leader is Abdul Aziz al-Hakim. Okay? And so he says to Mr. Bush, in the name of God, the merciful, the passionate, and blessing upon Prophet Muhammad and his purified family and his loyal companions, my meeting with President Bush today emerges from our shared commitment to continued dialogue and consultation among us and also on the basis of our conviction that the Iraq issue is of mutual interest. And he goes on and talking about how wonderful it is that he has such a great relationship with George Bush. Now, why am I sharing this with you? Because SCURI, it turns out, is the group in Iran that is buying IED-type weapons, is the group in Iraq that is buying IED-type weapons from Iran. Here is Michael Ware, the correspondent for CNN, live from Baghdad, talking with Wolf Blitzer just a few minutes ago.
But the newest thing, the most interesting thing out of this briefing is that an American senior defense official said that the Iraqi government confirmed that Iranian armed forces gave weapons to an Iraqi political faction.
And now, you know, you get that. The Iraqi government has now confirmed that a political faction, one of the political parties in Iraq, received weapons from Iran.
These included mortars and sniper rifles, weapons that the government said, well, this political faction needs for protection.
In other words, this was done with the approval of the Iraqi government, al-Maliki's government.
But the U.S. said these are not protective weapons. These are weapons for attacking.
Well, were they specific? Which faction received these Iranian weapons? Were they the Mehdi army, for example, loyal to the anti-American radical Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, who, as you know, his political forces are aligned with the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki?
Now, this is where it gets real interesting. What was the political party that the Bush administration just confirmed that the Iraqi government confirmed was receiving weapons from Iran at the request of and with the permission of the Iraqi government?
That's right. Muqtada's forces are aligned with Maliki's government. In fact, Muqtada and his militia put Maliki in power. And these defense officials today spoke openly about the provision of weapons to Muqtada's Mehdi militia. However, in this particular case, what they're talking about is this confirmation by the government of Iraq of the supply of weapons, not to Muqtada's faction, but to arguably the most powerful political faction within this government. That is the SCURI political party.
The Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution, so of Iraq. So, and this the guy that George Bush was shaking hands with and kissing on the cheeks 8 weeks ago. 9 weeks ago. So a lot on the table here. What's up with our healthcare system? What's up with our energy policy? What's up with our government, Iraq? 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. David in Sebastopol, California. Hey, David.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Just fine. What's up?
Well, I was listening to a discussion of single-payer healthcare plans a while ago, and they were throwing numbers around, and it was very interesting. What they said was that a significant percentage of our premium dollars goes to administering healthcare. You know, not keeping records of healthcare, but making sure that people only get the healthcare that they are supposed to be getting based on their premiums and their programs and all.
Right. The insurance companies operate in an overhead that runs anywhere from 20% to 30%. Whereas,
they were talking about 30% nationwide.
Right. Whereas Medicare operates at an overhead of 3%.
And what they said was that if you could eliminate that overhead, and apply it to healthcare nationwide, instead of only covering two-thirds of the people with our current premiums would pay for all non-elective medical and surgical procedures.
That's right. That's right. That's my point, is if we went with a single-payer healthcare system nationwide right now, it not only would not cost us anything more, it would save us money. The only problem is, and the only reason why this hasn't happened in the United States, although it has happened in the 36 of the other 37 industrialized nations in the world, the only reason it hasn't happened is because the health industry lobby has had so much power in Washington, D.C. and in the state capitals that they've been able to prevent it from happening. Because, frankly, basically what would happen is that the health insurance industry would go from being a multi-billion dollar industry, arguably a trillion dollar industry, down to being, a small handful of companies that basically patronize the very, very wealthy. And, for things like elective procedures and whatnot.
And that would be a good thing for us.
It would be a good thing for everybody except that industry. And that
industry, right.
You'd have, a few thousand people out of work, and you'd have a whole bunch of millionaires and billionaires who would no longer be millionaires and billionaires, or they would be, but they wouldn't be able to make any more. And that's the bottom line. So.
And this is an example of us having the best government that money can buy.
Yep. Well said. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
David, well said. Stephen in Springfield, Massachusetts. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for I read a couple of days about that LA incident, and I'm glad you got it out there. The version that I read said that the bag was a malfunctioning bag.
Yes, I read.
And I said to your screener that what impressed me most is how far along we are already. I know you downplay this, but how far along we are in particularly the working class and the poor, being able to dehumanize each other in this country. Look at the driver. Look at the driver of the van. He had no empathy whatsoever, no compassion. And, I work in a working class. As I said to you before when I've called in, I refer to myself, I guess trying to cover my proverbial whatever, I refer to myself as nouveau pauvre, but I work in a working class environment where I constantly hear what should be our comrades derided as shirkers and lazy and wanting a handout and all of this, and then lunchroom or whatever, I will see my fellow workers reading the tabloids and bemoaning how the paparazzi don't leave poor Lindsay Lohan alone,
yeah.
Or how, oh, poor Jennifer Aniston and poor this. And then if I bring up progressive taxation with people from working class and poor all the way up to upper middle class, this mantra, this article of faith is, well, I don't want to punish those who are successful, but boy, do you want to punish the people who have been unfortunate in this country, and you want to punish and punish, and I know that I don't know what to say, your methodology, your technique, whatever, your approach is to try to appeal to the best in the American people, and I hope that that works, but I have waited now at least 20 years, and I'm getting very tired.
Well, that's the key to it, Steve, is the 20 years, because this, what you're seeing is the fruit of Ronald Reagan's, spreading this meme, of his spreading the idea that government doesn't do anything good. That he made the comment once that there is no good talent in government. If there was, it would have been hired away by private industry. His famous.
I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
And that completely changed the idea of government in the United States as us, which is what the founders envisioned, and is basically how we viewed American government up until 1980. To them. And I'm sorry, the United States, the government is, this is not the Soviet Union, at least not yet. And government is and should be us. We should be us. And we should be, at a certain level, caring for us and providing opportunity for us as well. Making sure people do have the ability to start a business and function and make a whole lot of money if they want. And we can provide for a social safety net at the same time. Steve, thank you.
Respect your brothers and sisters who are in the same place as you.
Amen. Well said. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I'm taking my country back. Boys, you ain't been doing her right.
No, I haven't been.
Oh, I've been watching you and I don't like.
No, we don't.
You've been treating my scars and stripes.
Hot it up, Alex.
Jobs and some overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you botched Iraq. So I'm taking my country back.
And welcome back to the real free speech zone, where we are taking our country back. One caller at a time, one day at a time, one city at a time, one state at a time, one candidate at a time, one step at a time. And that's that. That was my point about it. Reagan changed. There was a major revolution in the United States. We have had this series of back and forths in the United States of this country being essentially conservative or essentially liberal in its primary behaviors. And we started out as a liberal country using contemporary terms. And we became essentially a conservative country around 1830, in the late 1820s, early 1830s. And that arguably led to the Civil War, and then, you know, from the Civil War until the 1880s during Reconstruction, we had became essentially liberal. You had Abraham Lincoln, who was the first. In modern terms, liberal. The Republican Party was a reform party. They were talking about women's suffrage and ending slavery and things like that, and, you know, honest government and government for the people. The Democratic Party had become like the party of slavery. And then in the 1880s, the railroads, the big corporations, the robber barons, they basically took over all the parties. We became very conservative again until 1901, when Teddy Roosevelt became president. And then he started busting up the trust, and we became very liberal again. And that lasted about 7 years. And then Teddy Roosevelt left office in 1908, and we became very conservative again. And that which led to the Republican Great Depression in 1929, and in 1932, we became liberal again. And from 1932 until 1980, I mean, you even had Republican presidents like Dwight Eisenhower and Richard Nixon, who thought that a 90% top marginal rate or a 70% top marginal rate tax rate were just fine. That trade barriers in the form of tariffs were a healthy thing for this country. And then Ronald Reagan came along and said, no, no, let's hand it back to the robber barons. Let's go back to being a conservative nation. And we've been there for 26 years, and look what it's done. It's destroyed the middle class. It's ripping apart our social fabric. And now with, you know, all this war mania on top of it, it's destroying the reputation of this country and in many ways destroying the reputation of liberal democracy all around the world. It's a tragedy. 1-866-440-8466. Dave in Los Angeles, California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Tom, I just wanted to mention to you on the situation in Los Angeles that the reason that we're hearing about this is that they're doing extensive condominium development down there. Nobody lived in downtown L.A. for the last 50 years, but now they're moving in. The condo developers want that Skid Row area cleaned up, and so now this is getting press. But I refuse to believe this isn't happening in other cities around the U.S.
Oh, I guarantee you it is, Dave. I guarantee you it's happening.
They'd like these people to be dropped off somewhere else. Yeah. At this point.
Yeah. Well, this is sort of a variation on what Giuliani did in the 80s in New York City with, I believe it was the 1980s, maybe it was the early 90s, when he finally became mayor. He had been the prosecutor for a while there. And when he became mayor, and he basically just scooped up all the homeless people in Manhattan and went and dumped them in, you know, the Bronx or Brooklyn. I mean, just get them out of sight. And rather than providing services, rather than dealing with the people who are mentally ill and providing them with services, rather than giving people who would like to have a job an opportunity to get a job, none of it was there. Yeah, good point, Dave. Thank you very much. Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. Hey, I want to just make sure that everybody understands that the same guys that brought us Iran-Contra are the guys that are still in there doing the planning in the war room. And who knows what was swapped off with whom back then. I don't know if they kept records or not. I don't sell these guys short at all.
Well, it's not just Iran-Contra. You can go all the way back to the 1970s, and you will find the Committee for a Present Danger, which I think was formed in 1974 by Don Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney.
Absolutely.
These are the guys who brought us the Cold War as well, or at least the hyper-amplification of the Cold War, are going from 1,000 missiles to 10,000 missiles. And then, and of course, Rumsfeld, what was he doing when Bush tapped him to be Secretary of Defense? You know what his job was? He was a lobbyist for the defense industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Cold War is the good old days for these guys.
Yeah,
they want
sure.
to see that
no,
time
they,
come
they,
back.
Their fingerprints are all over this stuff. Tom, thank you for the call. Ruth in Tacoma, Washington. Hey, Ruth.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I was just curious about why everybody thinks that just Iran is supplying weapons to Iraq. I mean, I can imagine that the Sunni countries are most likely helping the Sunnis. And if that's the case, are we going to attack everybody?
Well, and that was the point. I read that AP story a little earlier in the program where Saudi Arabia, they're doing private fundraisers. They're raising millions of dollars. You know, $25 million was the one that they documented, and using that money to buy shoulder-fired missiles and shipping them into the Sunni insurgents, who,
really?
By the way, are the people who are shooting down our helicopters. It's not the Shiites right now. The Shiites are in control of the government, and they're hoping for power there. They really would like things to calm down a little bit, although now we're getting some internecine warfare among the Shiite factions between Scary and al-Sadr's Mahdi army. But, good point, Ruth. Thank you, and well made. Oh, my. Joy in San Francisco. Hey, Joy, we just have a few seconds left. You will close the show.
Well, I was going to let you know that the Vice President Cheney, I think, has really flipped his wig. He's now calling himself the fourth branch of government.
You're kidding.
I'm not.
How did I miss that? Oh, is this just in the last 10 minutes or something?
No, it's been going on for a while. It has to do with classification of documents.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yes, this is right at the top of thinkprogress.org right now. Yes,
yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. Okay, Joy.
I'll call tomorrow.
Sure, yeah, and we'll talk about it in more detail tomorrow. Thank you. Amazing. Coming up on tomorrow's program, the top news of the day, plus I'll be disagreeing with conservative Nigel Innes' claim that there is a liberal intolerance and intellectual straitjacket on blacks with conservative viewpoints. Shirish Data is here on his book, Jeb, America's Next Bush, His 40 Years and What They Mean for the Nation. Yeek! That and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program tomorrow. And remember, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.